What does true customer obsession actually look like? I'm your host, Ruth Fittock, and in this episode of the Tomorrow Brands podcast, I sit down with Ramiel Deschamps, head of clubhouses at Virgin Atlantic, a huge brand that somehow managed to stay human. Rami shares why the team read every piece of feedback and why the CEO shows up in uniform for a shift just like everyone else. It's a masterclass in emotional intelligence, people-first culture, and the quiet power of consistency, all anchored in brand values that actually show up in the details. If you've ever wondered how to make a big brand feel small, this one's for you.
Hi, Rami. Thank you so much for joining us today to chat about customer obsession. I am such a massive Virgin Atlantic fan and always have been because I think this is a brand that really gets their customers. Is this the case? How do you do that? And why?
Thank you, Ruth. Thank you for having me on. Really appreciate it. It's lovely to see you. You were with us not that long ago, so it's great to get a temperature check with you today. In general, all things brand. And yes, brand is important to us from a external perspective, from a marketing perspective, but it's equally important to us in terms of how we deliver our customer experience on the day, whether it's in our lounges or on board. So it's something that really goes through the heart of everything that we do. Airports, airlines, airport lounges are quite challenging when it comes to what the brand is offering for different customers and different experiences, because customer requirements are incredibly different. And I think it's quite unique from a brand, from a hospitality perspective. I'll give you an example. A few months ago, I was working in one of our lounges as a waiter, which I try and do at least once a month. And within my section, I had three different customers, all with very different needs. So we had one customer who was Eric, our regular business traveler. We see Eric once every 2 weeks, and his expectations from us is that he knows us and we know him. We'll have his table ready for him. We know what he likes to eat, and we know we need to leave him alone and to get on with what he's doing. Sat next to Eric, it was a lovely honeymoon couple. They came in about 5 hours early before their flight. They came to try the breakfast menu. They waited to try the lunch menu as well. They wanted to try all the cocktails. And they wanted to experience this because they knew it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to do something really great and different. And the third table was a lady who was unfortunately traveling with us because there'd been a death in the family, and she was traveling to sort the affairs of the family when she got there. So you've got three incredibly different customer requirements from three very different sets of customers. And we can't differentiate that by price point. Often, if you think about hospitality, each of those customer bases would buy a different package, right? But you can't do that in an environment where the customer has essentially already bought the product, and you need to be all of those different service options to all of those different people in the moment at the same price point with the same menu, with the same offerings of goods and services to all three. I think it's quite unique.
So how, well, firstly, I love that you're out on the floor once a month. And it's funny because when we talk about big brands, they tend, the bigger you get, the further you tend to get away from your customer. So that actually going there and being on the floor, I just love that. And I think more brands should be doing that.
I think on that, there's a nuanced point with that, which some brands I think get wrong. So I think some leaders or some people who are organizing teams feel like being on the shop floor is being there for a couple of hours. You know, if it's in a contact center, I listened into some phone calls, or if I'm on the shop floor, I kind of pop my head round for a few minutes and watch people in action. That's not the same as doing a shift. Doing a shift is turning up when everyone else turns up. You're not wearing a shirt and tie or a suit to differentiate yourself from everyone else. You're wearing what everyone else is wearing, and you're doing the same thing everyone else is doing. And I think what is great about working at Virgin Atlantic is that from the CEO downwards, we understand the difference between a kind of token effort of learning from customer experience from doing the job to actually doing it. Shai Weiss, our CEO, he came and did a shift in the clubhouse last year, and he started same time as everyone else. He's in a uniform. We didn't put a big badge on him that said, hey, it's the CEO, be nice to him, right? It was the same for all the leadership team members that do the same thing.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. I think it's so smart. And I think as someone who recently got to experience the Virgin Atlantic sort of premium tier experience, it is the people that set it apart, I think, and that level of service you get from the way that you're greeted. And I think what's really impressive is, you know, that the way you just described those three different people in the lounge, the fact that you know those backstories, that level of taking that time to understand who these people are, why they're traveling, how do you do that?
Well, firstly, I think it's not just about me as someone who's doing it once a month does that. We really encourage everyone to know these stories, not just us. It's really important for us because, firstly, it's about sharing those stories, right? Like, people love working with brands, or people love working for brands who understand the customers that are using those brands, who've made an amazing experience for those customers. A couple of months ago, we had someone get engaged in the Heathrow Clubhouse. And I love that we shared the stories, and I love that we can talk about that. Like, that really encourages a great experience, not just for the people in the lounges at the time who are doing these things, but also being able to say that you were part of some once-in-a-lifetime experience. We want people to spend time who are on the ground understanding, why are people traveling? Where are they going? Is it their first time? Is it their 100th time? So for us, it's about encouraging spending more time with customers. But also, I think it's about empowerment. I'll give you the example that I just gave, the person who's traveling for a death in the family. The duty manager, you know, has a whole host of roles to play in the clubhouse. They are a senior leader on shift. The duty manager on that day spent, I would say, at least an hour with that person who's traveling due to the death. Now, it's really important that we empower everyone in our clubhouses that if they feel like they need to spend more time with one customer, they should do that. We're not standing over them going, well, you know, your time per customer is really drops here on this particular shift. We want people to take the initiative and empower them to build those relationships.
And it feels like a real people-first business, Virgin Atlantic, that the people that you have working for you, that sort of front line of the brand, like you say, you're empowering them. I'm assuming you must do some pretty amazing sort of customer service training across the board. It's just, from my recent experience, sort of every single touch point was a very genuinely friendly, warm. How do you create that culture? Is it through your hiring? Is it through your training?
So there's a few things. One is the culture leads to people wanting to continue work. I spoke to one of my colleagues who's the managing director of a lounges business, has 20 or 30 lounges across the world, and we were kind of sharing notes with each other. And I said, oh, my attrition rate of my turnover staff rate is like 20%. It's really high. Like, people, but that's okay. We're okay with that. You know, 20% feels like a good number. And he turned around to me and he's like, I would kill for 20%. People want to work with us. They want to stay with us. If you encourage them that they're part of something bigger and they're able to be empowered. So a big part of it is keeping hold of the great people. We do have a program within our clubhouses that encourages people to progress within the clubhouse. We have loads of team members who start as our crew, our waiters and wait staff, and move right up to duty manager and beyond into other parts of the business. In order to keep the best people, you need to ensure that people feel like there is a career journey for these people. And also, length of service is unheard of in the hospitality industry. I think our average length of service for our bar team is 7 or 8 years, which, again, it's about the retaining of staff who feel like they are empowered and able to provide that experience. And in answer to your question, Ruth, do we do a lot of training? Of course we do a lot of training. But actually, for us, a lot of it's about encouraging people to dial up themselves. We're never going to say, this is how you greet a guest. This is how you interact. It's more about saying, be yourself. Understand what the customer needs. That's what they've got to learn. But not necessarily being prescriptive on how you say goodbye to a guest like you do see in other hospitality environments.
I love that, because I remember the most recent Virgin Atlantic brand campaign. That feels very in line with that campaign. So that's coming all the way through the business then, from your advertising to how you actually are with your staff, which is how it should be, right?
Yeah, completely agree. And again, I've worked at other companies in the past, and often the external brand and the internal brand have felt quite unaligned, shall we say? Whereas I think where we work now, everyone is behind being yourself, being unique. We overinvest in encouraging people to develop themselves, to be themselves. And yeah, I was really proud of the recent brand campaign. Really felt that it nailed who we were as a team.
So we talked a bit briefly about those three different types of consumer. The lounge is obviously a brand touch point. for Virgin Atlantic. And we talked about how tough it is because you've got these different consumers and how you kind of need to personalize the experience. So can you give an example of how you might do that?
A couple of things on the personalizing a brand. So personalizing experience is really important. Part of what we do in all of our clubhouses. And we do that through several ways. One of them is technology. So often when brands talk about technology, they think about it from a cost reduction perspective, right? You know, particularly in a hospitality environment. So if I invest in technology to help people with their ordering process, it means I can hire less staff to work on the floor because more people are interacting with technology. We go against that expectation. In fact, it just for us, the focus is reprioritizing the staff who want that experience. I think historically, particularly when you think about luxury experiences, we bundled everyone in together. If we talk about service style for a moment, service style from a luxury experience was everyone gets the same white glove service. That's not what we're seeing from consumers. Consumers see luxury as what they want, how they want it, when they want it. That is far more helpful for consumers to feel loved than overindulgence. Champagne is a great example, Ruth. Let's take another three customer subset. If you had a customer who wanted something cold with bubbles in, if you want a customer who said, oh, what's your house pour? Let me take a picture of it standing there. So brand status was important to that secondary customer. We had a third customer who said, I want a vintage cuvee 2008. Then they really knew their stuff. Now, historically, if you have uniformity when it comes to product offering, we used to give all those three customer types exactly the same product. Whereas now we are looking at sort of nonverbal cues for the team to understand what those three different customers want. So again, with champagne, rather than offering all those three customers exactly the same product, for someone who wants something cold with bubbles in, you know, we have an amazing house pour champagne. It's my preference. It's my favorite. It might not necessarily be a brand that you'd recognize, but it's a great, great champagne. With the secondary group, we have Laurent Perrier. It's a household name brand. Everyone recognizes that. And then we have our off-menu selection, whereby if someone shows real knowledge and expertise in a particular subject, it's really important to us to be able to offer them something special to recognize that particular customer will see value in what we're providing.
You do realize that everybody listening to this podcast is going to, next time they're in the Virgin Clubhouse, start dropping cues like cuvee and vintage.
That's fine. More than happy. Like, we love that kind of stuff, right? As consumers, we love the idea of an off-menu selection. We love the idea that we're getting something that no one else has. So if we've given away a couple of secrets today, brilliant.
I know for next time now as well. So briefly mentioned there about what other people are doing. So how do you differentiate against other brands? Because, you know, I imagine it's a competitive space. What sets you apart?
We've talked about the differentiation of product offering. We've talked about empowering people to be themselves. I would say a lot of brands talk about investing in their people, but we really put our money where our mouth is on that one. And I'll give you an example. Our JFK Clubhouse, we see 400 to 500 people a day in that lounge. On the floor, we will probably have around 7 to 8 wait. Our Clubhouse crew are looking after that group. Now, if you go next door to a very large airline lounge, which I won't name the brand of, sees about 5,000 people a day in that lounge. Now, they will have the same number of people working on the floor as we do looking after its guests for 5,000 people that we have for 400 or 500 people. So I think investing in people and seeing the value of face-to-face customer interactions is really important for us. And, you know, even if you had the best-willed colleague in the world who is working on that floor in that JFK lounge, what kind of interactions are you likely to have? Like, it's really challenging. So I think you've got to hire the best people, but you've also got to make sure that you give them the opportunity to have those interactions that they're trained for. It's a really important part of what we do. And the other element is luxury. So luxury means lots of very different things to different people. As I mentioned earlier, luxury to some people could be what they want, how they want, when they want it. But also in terms of what the actual offering is, I think even 10, 15 years ago, luxury was gold leaf. It was stuff drowning in truffles. It was It was opulence for the sake of opulence. Whereas what we're seeing with consumers now is a focus on provenance. You know, they want to know, where is there food that they're being served? Is it in season? Is it been freshly prepared? Where was it picked from? Where is your meat from? Like, these sort of questions we're seeing far more from our consumers that we wouldn't have been seeing 10, 15 years ago. So a lot of the focus that we have when we do menu design is what's in season, what's fresh. It's not about necessarily about uniformity. There is some consistency across all of our clubhouses. So we have the same signature cookie across all of our clubhouses, because sometimes people want something that they know and they want something they identify with. We have a signature chicken burger, which is pretty consistent across all of our clubhouses. But apart from one or two items, it's really up to those head chefs of those local clubhouses to think about what's in season for them. What will their customers recognize? What will British customers overseas want to see on their menu that makes them think of home? So we give people the brief and we empower the team, not just when it comes to service, but also when it comes to design and creativity.
It's interesting how human-centered the business is from what you're saying, that it's, I mean, I'm assuming that you do use some data to get to this, but actually a lot of it is based on empowering the team and them listening to people.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting conflict between who you are as a brand and what you believe your brand believes in versus what customers want and listening to customers. And quite often in an airline environment, the focus is always, what was the customer feedback? What did they like? What they didn't like? Yes, that's important. But it's also important to understand who you are as a brand, what you value, what are your ethics as a brand. I'll give you an example. Across the entire Virgin Atlantic journey, we don't serve beef. So we don't make a big song and dance out of it. We don't plaster it on the menu and say, hey, we don't do beef because it's more environmentally friendly. We just don't serve beef across the journey. Now, do we get pushback on that sometimes? Absolutely. Oh, you're trying to make me vegetarian. You're trying to, you know, we're about to get on a plane. Why are you focusing on CO2 emissions of your F&B? Because it's important to us. And actually, what are our brand values and how does it reflect in what we're offering versus what customers are telling us? So customer feedback, customer data profiling is important. We need to understand who our customers are and what they want, but it needs to be looked at in the lens of who we are and what services we want to provide to our customers.
Yeah, and it's interesting, that pushback of, oh, I'm about to get on a plane. It's like, there's sort of the answer on that is, if you can't do everything, then you shouldn't do anything, versus brands making all changes where they can. That approach of, well, don't do it unless it's perfect. Well, why not just make small steps where we can, and if everyone made those small steps, then they'd up to big steps.
On your point about, you know, perfection, I think it's also about providing consumers, customers, passengers, whatever you want to call them, it's about providing them with more tangible links to your brand values, right? So 70% of most airline CO2 emissions is fuel, right? And as head of clubhouses, I can't do anything about that. We're doing amazing things. You know, we had our first ever transatlantic flight fueled from waste. And that was an amazing achievement for us as an airline. It's very hard to understand as a consumer what the difference is, because to the average consumer, they see a plane in the sky. Yes, it's more eco-friendly, but actually other than that, how consumable is changes that the aviation industry can make? It's not very, I would say. But if you can think about it in your menu design, if you can think about it, how you wrap your blankets and in-flight headphones more effectively, if customers can see those changes, those are really tangible, understandable changes that companies can make. So yes, would we like to make huge changes to our entire journey? We are, but those that take a bit more time. If we can make small changes along the way, why wouldn't we?
And I think, like you say, these are visual cues. And I noticed, you know, the little amenities bag was recyclable. The beauty products were a clean skincare brand. They were in aluminium, not plastic. And those things are important because they're visual and they start to shift people's perception. And again, that luxury, what is luxury now? It can also be sustainable.
Yes, yes. Sustainable and luxury. I think historically, when you thought about sustainability and luxury, the assumption was always, if I want to be more sustainable, I have to be less luxurious. Like, you couldn't have one and the other. But what we're seeing come through, particularly in the brands that we work with, is that actually you can have those two things together. In fact, often it's more luxurious if you have a sustainable brand, because that brand has probably put more time and effort into producing that product than those who aren't thinking about sustainability.
So how does your customer obsession translate into loyalty?
Loyalty for our consumers is a really important part of the Clubhouse's experience. And when I started this role as head of Clubhouse's, I was overwhelmed by how loyal our customers are every day. I remember when I put on my LinkedIn that I was becoming the head of Clubhouse's, I was overwhelmed with messages from people I didn't know. And my immediate reaction to that was, oh, you know, these people are going to ask me if they can have lounge access next time they fly. They're going to want something. But it was not a single request for something else. It was actually just customers wanting to share their experiences of using our Clubhouse's and how exciting that was that I got a chance to be the kind of custodian of our Clubhouse's. A really great example, one of our most loyal customers, he sent me three pictures. Again, I'd never met him before. It was our first interaction. He sent me three pictures. There was a picture of his pregnant wife, a second picture of a six-month-old baby, a third picture of a 12-year-old girl, all within the JFK Clubhouse. And he said, I just wanted to share with you my daughter at different stages, the latter being 6 months ago, last time we were in the JFK Clubhouse. And actually, how many brands do you have out there where consumers are proactively reaching out to share these major life experiences with you as a company? And I think we can achieve that as Virgin Atlantic because we feel like a very small, big company. We feel like a really big brand, but a brand that is easy to talk to, that you can communicate with, that you can feel like you have a personal relationship with. And we see that with our most loyal customers. I hope it's because we have a great product and everything else, but it's also because people have a personal relationship with the brand and they want to continue that relationship.
A small, big company. That is absolutely brilliant. I couldn't love that more. And I see you get tagged in Clubhouse experiences on LinkedIn all the time and see that level of someone saying, you know, who doesn't like calories on menus and gets delivered menu without even having to ask. That's sort of that level of personalization. I also think I saw that you read every single piece of survey feedback that you get.
First thing I do in the morning is read every single piece of feedback. I understand what people like. I probably spend too much time on the things that people don't like rather than the things that they love. But it's really important to us, to me, that if a customer leaves a really interesting piece of feedback, it doesn't have to be negative. I think a lot of brands, when they think of responding to customer feedback, they do it when it's negative feedback. Well, I had a piece of feedback gave a couple of weeks ago where someone was asking where the chairs that we had in the San Francisco Clubhouse were from. And I responded to the piece of feedback saying, oh yeah, this is where we got it from. Here's the website link. If you have any other questions, let me know. The impact of that was, I just thought it was a normal thing to do. Someone's asked us a question, we respond to it. Actually, the relationship that you build with your customers is great if it's not just, oh, I'm sorry you had a bad experience, you know, let me look into that. If you can have more of a dialogue, it really changes the dynamic between you and your customers.
I also love that the implication of that is that someone loves the San Francisco lounge so much that they want to recreate it in their own home.
Yeah, happens more often than you think. In fact, I won't mention which lounge, but there is one lounge where we've had to replace over five table lamps in the last 12 months because, you know, if it's not nailed down and people like it, the idea of it in their living room, they might pop it in their hand luggage.
I mean, a lamp, that's pushing it, isn't it? On the sort of boundaries of what's acceptable. A beer mat, maybe. A glass, you know, borderline. A lamp.
I would say so.
Okay, and just to wrap up, I wanted to ask you about how you use brands because I think something else that's always stood out to me with Virgin Atlantic is the brands that you partner with and feature. So there's always some quite exciting smaller brands in your offering, as well as those bigger, more household names that we've mentioned already. Can you explain a little bit why you choose to work with those kinds of brands?
So Virgin Atlantic loves working with smaller brands for two reasons. One is because they really help signal to us what categories will be big in the future. So we think about brands in three different categories. So there is a new brand in an established category. So that might be a new gin brand or a new crisp brand. It's an established category and we stock it. And that's quite a straightforward search. And for those kinds of brands, we're looking for them doing things in a fresh new way or a great story or an identity. And it's really easy because you can change brand A for brand B if the category is established. You've got the second group of brands that we work with, and they might be new brands in a new category. So we're using them to understand, is there an appetite for nootropics? You know, what's going on in the CBD world? Is it hype or is it, are customers going to buy into it? And we're using those brands to understand trends within the market. And then the third group is this accompaniment to established brands. So that might be a little biscuit next to your cup of tea or that sort of thing. And those are there to enhance really important parts of our service already. So that's the way we think about the different brands that we work with and what we're looking for. So it's either, you know, option one, it's that cultural cachet. So how do we work with brands that we think are really cool and we like the stories that we hear? It's new categories altogether that we're trying to test. Or it's thinking about that third group, which is how do we add to what we already offer in a new and interesting way?
Great. I'm sure you're going to get more requests into your inbox from brands who might be listening.
I love talking to founders. I love talking to owners. They give me energy. They're just people who've decided this is what they're going to do. This is what they're going to found. Love talking to those people. So more the merrier, Ruth.
Perfect. Tomorrow brands. Building the brands of tomorrow. Tomorrow brands. Building the brands of tomorrow.